Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team of Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Sunday, March 5th, 2023. Since we last recorded an episode of Looking at Lucasfilm, three new episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch have become available for viewing over on Disney+. We had The Crossing, which debuted on February 15th, The Retrieval, which was really the second half of the story that started in The Crossing, that debuted on February 22nd. And then we had Metamorphosis, which premiered on March 1st and really upped the stakes for Omega. But Brian, let's be honest, nobody cares about that, or at least is not as enthusiastic as they should be.
No, because the Baby Yoda show.
There we go. The season three of The Mandalorian debuted on the...
Bad baby.
There we go. Yes. Inappropriate hugging.
Yeah.
But yeah, that debuted on March 1st. And all that Star Wars now want to talk about is that show and where it seems to be headed this season. Quick aside, if Purgles, a.k.a. the Space Whales, are going to be part of this interconnected Star Wars limited series universe, Brian, it's got to be official.
Yeah.
On Star Wars Ahsoka, we are now going to find out what became of Ezra Bridger. Because think about it, that's season four of Star Wars Rebels ended with Ezra and... blanking his name. Admiral Thrawn. Yes, being dragged off. And we already saw, I want to say, in season two, that episode with Ahsoka, you know, where is Thrawn?
Well, it's something, too, because Thrawn and Ezra are far away, correct? They're probably far away. Mm-hmm. They're probably not in the same universe that everything else was happening. Mm-hmm. So that could be what Lucasfilm wants to do, is... make up a whole new thing going on someplace else.
Interesting idea.
So this could be part of that too. Like, I think Filoni just said in a interview, which we'll probably talk about later, but basically he said things are happening all over the place. And I think Ahsoka is going to go away from what Mandalorian is doing and bring us back into the Rebels and maybe even their own kind of area.
That could be cool.
Yeah, because then that could be, if you're going to widen the universe, you do it with that, then you do the High Republic, and now you've got this whole thing that you're going to put together, and you're not going to rely on just the Skywalker saga.
Well, we have some news related to the Galactic Star Cruiser, which we'll get to in a moment, and we'll talk more about the Mandalorian and the Bad Batch in the second half of today's show, but first, the news. And as always, the news portion of this week's Looking at Lucasfilm is brought to you by Storybook Destination, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Okay, so again, we were just talking about The Mandalorian, and very smart way to promote the fact that Season 3 of The Mandalorian was back on Disney Plus on March 1st. But did you see where Mando and Grogu showed up at the Florida version of...
Yeah, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
People went nuts. Mm-hmm. Now, did they announce this? Because it looks like a lot of people were there to see
it. Well, I want to say the news broke that it was happening a day or so beforehand. And yes, it looks like a lot of folks made a point of being there, especially, it was kind of a Day of the Locust moment, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah,
It got real close there, but a lot of social influencers.
Well, especially the video that I saw, actually looks like the guy was in a wave. I mean, the camera kept on moving up and down and back and forth, and you would see glimpses of Din and Grogu, but then it panned over to this little girl with her Grogu, which I think was getting as much love as the other one. So it was really incredible to see the love for these characters and what's going on with them.
We only found out on September 11th at the D23 Expo. In fact, it was Jon Favreau himself who stood on stage that said Mando and Grogu would be appearing. But again, they didn't specifically list the date till later. It was going to be November of 18th of last year. But they'd be debuting at Disneyland Park. And they had the same craziness out there. In fact, what was kind of interesting with those characters, those walk-around characters for the park, they actually had to bump up the sound level for the interactions because there were so many people crowded around that people just couldn't hear what Mando was saying. But at that time, you know, when people ask, oh, this is cool, when is this coming to Florida? And the initial explanation is, well, it's not. Because right. The belief was that with the Florida version of Black Spire Outpost, this is not only an area that's open to guests who are, you know, vacationing at Walt Disney World, visiting Disney's Hollywood Studios, but it's also a key element of people who've booked passage on the Halcyon, that right. 2-day-long cruise on land aboard the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser.
Because one of the day trips is a trip to Batuu, and it's not in the same time frame as Yoda or as Grogu and Din Djarin.
Well, another thing that was explained to me was the fear was that when people are planet side from the Halcyon, it's a 2-day-long experience, and they're supposed to be
right.
planet side for 5 or 6 hours tops, and they have all of these tasks that they're
the missions.
That's exactly. They're supposed to complete that then impact the storylines that they have back on the starship. And the worry was that people were going to say, ooh, there's Mando and Grogu, and I have to get a picture taken with them because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And right. So it's like, we can't do that.
So is it just Mando and Grogu? Is Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, are they there too? Or is it just to promote that the Mandalorian has started again? Because they did get a lot of press.
They did. If you noticed, at Disneyland Paris, in Discovery Land, the Mandalorian also appeared there starting on Wednesday. Now, mind you, it's a much shorter window of time there. They're only supposed to be in the French Disney park through the 14th of March. The phrase is before they head off on another mission. But it is fascinating that they're now in Florida, you know, because in effect, this is at this point all about giving people what they want.
And it's all about the money too. Just think of all of the Baby Yoda stuff that they're going to be selling in the gift shops.
Well, it's interesting you bring up money. February 24th, it was revealed that Walt Disney World cast members were being offered a 50% off discount on selected two-night cruises aboard the Halcyon. For two adults, it was going to be $2,490. For two adults and a child, it was $2,670. But now, if you combine that with the info that came out back on January 19th, when it was revealed that several voyages aboard the Halcyon that had been previously scheduled for the summer, the dates were July 4th, 12th, 7th, August 1st, 7th, 15th, 27th, and then in September the 4th and the 12th, had been canceled. And that was supposedly because of low booking levels.
Right, and they consolidated them on the other days that were open.
What's very interesting about the Galactic Star Cruiser is that you interact with members of the crew, and right. they suss out whether or not, okay, you know, are you a fan of the First Order? Are you helping out with the Rebellion? And that sort of thing. And they help sort of steer the storyline. And what actually is going on this summer with this, because what's interesting is if you look at that, you know, the sailings on the 4th, the 12th, the 17th, or for that matter, the 1st, the 7th, you know, they're relatively close together. And the notion is that the entertainment team may be using this downtime on the Halcyon to try out a new storyline.
Oh, wow.
They've done a lot of survey work, and Rey and Kylo Ren aren't really moving the needle. when it's revealed, like, oh, you go on the Halcyon, and oh, you get to interact with, you know, I mean, Chewbacca, but, you know, Kylo Ren will show up and Rey will show up. And it's like, well, that's nice. But when can I see Mando and Grogu?
Okay.
To circle back to your earlier question about, well, what about Boba Fett and what about Fennec Shand? This may be what's going on here. We may be seeing over the summer during this time when, you know, the Intergalactic Star Cruiser goes dark for a number of days. This isn't so much about low bookings as it is, let's see how we go about giving the people what they want.
Well, not only that, if you go on the cruiser, right, yep, and you have the storyline, you've had it. Mm-hmm. It's like seeing a movie once.
There we go.
Right? Now, some people would want to come back, but now if you give them the choice of this is going to deal with, you'll get to see the honeymoon couple. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get to see Luke and Leia and Han. Or you get to see Grogu and stuff like that. People, it would bring in, I mean, if it wouldn't be that hard just to switch the sets and switch the characters, then you're going to get people coming. Like when you go on a cruise, on a regular ocean cruise, it's never the same.
It's worth noting that the one-year anniversary of the launch of Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser was actually this past week, the very same day that the newest episodes of The Bad Batch and Season 3 of Mando got underway, March 1st. So if they could get a second storyline going, and then it would be, oh, do you want Galactic Star Cruiser Classic, or do you want the Mando Adventure, or, you know, and to be able to offer different scenarios, you know, to bring back folks who've already done the previous scenario. I mean, it is a very interesting idea. And remember, there is still a component of the Walt Disney Company that very much wants the Halcyon to be the first of a series of on-land cruise ships.
Right.
They had supposedly already had conversations with both Disneyland Paris and Tokyo Disney Resort about getting their own Star Wars-themed hotels with a voyage experience. But again,
would it be all Halcyon, or would it be other voyages? Would it be other Star Cruises? That could be cool, too, because then you'll have a small group of people who will go around the world to these different cruises.
This is true. But I think at this point we are in a you have to skywalk before you can run situation. You have to prove that the first one works.
Okay.
This kind of circles back on Disneyland history. Remember, back in the late 50s, early 60s, Walt and his original team down in Anaheim learned the hard way. It's like, look, around Christmas, over the summer, we can run this place 7 days a week. We can run it from 8 o'clock in the morning to midnight. But in the fall and in certain weeks during the spring, you know, it just doesn't make sense to keep this place open on Mondays and Tuesdays. And so they would run from Wednesdays to Sundays and just a 5-day schedule. And that's kind of what I've been hearing from the folks at the resort, to the effect of, we're going to take a closer look at an operation schedule. We're going to vary the storylines. The company's invested a lot of money in this. They want it to work.
But how does, with the cast members, how does it affect them? I mean, now here they were getting 4 days. Now they're going to, well, actually, no, you can't work somebody 7 mm-hmm. days. So if they're just working them 5 days, then that's, you know.
It's a 2-day long cruise experience, but these people have to be, I mean, it's not a question of you can swap out the captain, you know. It's just sort of like the captain I've been interacting with this whole time. So they are there for the whole 48-hour long experience.
Yeah. No, then that makes a lot more sense too. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, you know, then you consolidate what's going on. But then there's always people who, well, I can't make it. So maybe they just have to, you know, they have to make a big deal out of it, though, so people know that it's going to be offline or some kind of Star Wars thingy for the first few days of each week.
Let's put a pin in this and revisit this idea in a few weeks, because remember, Len and I are doing our thing with the Storybook Destination folks aboard the Halcyon tail end of March into April, and at least then I'll be able to talk authoritatively about what it's actually like to be on board this thing and do the missions over at Batu.
What if you would ask the captain or one of the crew, I hear you may be going on different voyages. Do you think they'll have a set line for that?
Here's the thing. The people who are coming to do this with us, they're paying big bucks. And it's one of these things where I'm kind of approaching the whole thing with sort of a Hippocratic oath approach. It's like, I'm not here to throw monkey wrenches. I'm not here to do any harm. If anything, that's one of the things I'm trying to figure out how to thread the needle on, is to make sure I don't do anything that prevents people from having the best possible experience on this thing.
Well, what I want to find out too, when you do this, find out how many people have done it before and how being with you and Lynn, how that changes. Because it may be a good thing to know that, okay, we had a better time because, you know, here we were with Lynn, who is, what's his character?
Oh, Hank Lonely.
Hank Lonely. And then we have the Lonely Jedi or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these guys made it because when you're with a group, on a tour, things do get a lot better, especially when one person is irritating you and or another person is someone you want to, you know, walk on the beaches with. It's a different experience to be on a cruise when you're with a group. And I would love to hear what this could, because I don't think anybody's done that, have they?
I do not know. I mean, that's the thing. The Halcyon's only been doing this for a year, this week.
Right, but everybody's on their own. They don't go with a group like you go on a tour group of Europe. This will set precedence, I think.
Like I said, let's put a pin in it. We'll talk about it the next time. Okay, back to The Mandalorian now. Now, you mentioned that Dave Filoni, I guess, was speaking with folks at ET Online, and he had news about
ET and everything. They're out there, or Filoni's out there, and the main thing he's talking about, how it's a group process, how he started with George, Kathleen came up to him, Kathleen wanted to bring him into the live action, set him up with J.J. Abrams, set him up with Ryan, which Ryan basically held his hand and showed him all about how to, you know, the different lenses, the sound, you know, where you place the camera or where you could place the many cameras. And then she connected him with John. And I think, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there as who's doing what, and John Favreau and Filoni, they're saving Star Wars. Well, it's all a group effort. And I think it seems to bother Filoni and Favreau so much that they're out there saying, we couldn't have done it without JJ, we couldn't have done it without Kathleen, we couldn't have done it without even Ryan. And they're trying to make it like it's not us against them, it's us figuring it out, this whole thing. I mean, and then also, of course, he goes out there and Filoni goes out there and he drops little bombs and stuff like, eventually Grogu is going to talk.
He also made sure to mention that this is not going to be Yoda 2, right?
No, it's not going to be. See, the whole thing was Yoda was raised in an environment where everybody talked that way. And then when we saw Yaddle, a few episodes ago, Bad Batch.
That's right.
Yaddle, of course, you know, talked like she was English aristocrat. So Grogu will speak like the Mandalorian speaks. So he may have that stilted, very monotone. Yeah, because he's around the Mandalorian, he's around the armorer, he's around, you know, Night Watch. Those people talk very distinctly.
Interesting point. Okay. All right. I like that. And thanks for making the connection to Yaddle there. Now, it's worth noting, Mr. Favreau is also out making the rounds, also promoting Mandalorian Season 3. In fact, he put an appearance this past week on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, that was great. Wasn't that amazing, the way he was talking about everything that he did? And you know Kimmel's a big fan of Favreau's.
Oh, no doubt.
Because when Kimmel first started his show, he used to have guest hosts. And Favreau was a guest host for, I think, 2 weeks. And it was great. Mm-hmm. It was really funny. And they're really close. Mm-hmm. So John gets in there and just tells him all bunch of stuff, including... Mm-hmm. John said he wants to, I don't think he said it in this interview, but he did say in another interview that he's already looking into season 5.
You discovered Favreau has stated that what, season 4?
Season 4 is beginning October of 2023, but he wants to go on forever. Mm-hmm. He goes, there's enough stories that we can never stop. And he goes, I'm already thinking about 5, yet 4 is written. Mm-hmm. We know what's going on, and we're going to start in October.
Okay.
So he dropped that. I don't know whether he was supposed to or not.
A number of folks out ahead of the debut of season 3 of The Mandalorian were given access to a number of episodes. But you're given the privilege of seeing these things early.
Right.
But you got to respect the embargo. And I want to say the embargo for episode 2 of The Mandalorian season 3 got broken the day that episode 1 dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, people were, you know, already talking about, well, it's a much longer episode. You know, episode 2 is, and it's a much better episode.
But they didn't drop any, they didn't give away anything. There was just, it was like, what is that package under the Christmas tree?
Yeah, I know. Since November of 1978.
Oh, shivers just went up my spine. Like somebody, like a dead thing, just crawled up the back of my spine.
Well, you know, there were 13 million of us who saw this thing in real time. The Star Wars Holiday Special, 2 hour long on CBS.
Wow.
We all know what George has said after the fact. I mean, I love that quote from him, you know, to the effect of, if I could get a hold of every copy that out of this thing that existed, I would destroy them with a hammer. You know, I mean...
Well, it's just weird, though. It was ironic about it. It was based on something he had written down.
This is true.
And it's just funny because all these writers, they were all comedy writers. They were all... variety show writers, they took what he wrote down and they made it into something I don't think anybody would have thought of.
Perhaps you're curious why Brian and I are talking about this at this point. Well, the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special is now the subject of a film. The film is called A Disturbance in the Force, and it will be having its world premiere at South by Southwest, well, next week, March 11th.
The perfect place for it.
It's directed by Jeremy Kuhn and Steve Kozak. And Kuhn, you know, for looking at Lucasfilm fans, he's actually the best known for the documentary Raiders! The story of the greatest fan film ever made.
Right.
Whereas Kuzak, he's got amazing, a very lengthy television career. I mean, he worked on Whose Line Is It Anyway? He's the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, which perhaps explains the amazing set of folks they've got to comment on this thing. You know, I mean, when you look at the laundry list, it's Seth Green, it's Weird Al Yankovic, it's Paul Scheer, you know, who, by the way, is a fan of the thing that Len and I do together. Terry Killian, Guzman, and the late Gilbert Godfrey.
I know. Isn't that going to be wonderful that we can hear Gilbert, how Star Wars and how the holiday special changed his life? And also, see, here's a name that not a lot of people know of, but you should. Bruce Valanche.
Yes, yes.
He was one of the writers on it.
We're about to come up on the Academy Awards, and people even today speak of Billy Crystal's years of hosting the Academy Awards and how amazing that was. But a lot of that was on the back of gags that Bruce Valanche wrote.
Right.
And Brian made me aware of the trailer that's out there for Disturbance in the Force, and the filmmakers, Jeremy and Steve, did a really, really smart thing here. In fact, you were alluding to it when we started this segment, that the people who wrote the Star Wars Holiday Special had been recruited out of the TV variety world of the 1970s. And what they do as part of this is give you enough footage. I mean, for example, they show a clip of the epic length Star Wars production number that they did in the Donnie Marie show, where was Lucas himself who provided the costumes, right? I mean,
well, not only for that one, but also the Richard Pryor one, where Richard Pryor goes into the bar. Actually, he's the bartender, and he starts riffing about every character that's in the bar.
Yeah. The cantina in Mos Eisley. Yes. You know, the all cantina, of the monsters there.
Yeah. And it's just, I think it happened on those two shows, but I think it was happening everywhere. Even almost every sitcom would have a Star Wars story or joke, storyline.
Well, you know, I mean, face it, the film was huge. Yeah. And in fact, I'm really looking forward to seeing A Disturbance in the Force, because one of the more interesting aspects of this is that nobody thought Star Wars would become Star Wars.
Right.
You know, this thing that would be running in theaters for a year and become, you know, not just a successful film, but a piece of pop culture and, you know, a hugely successful toy line and launch theme park attractions and series of films and television shows and that sort of thing. What's fascinating about the Star Wars holiday special is it was one of the very first things out of the gate. And let's also remember, you know, as much as it's made fun of these days and looked down upon, remember, this is what brought Boba Fett. You know,
That was bizarre too. That they did that, and then they brought him into the live action, just like what Filoni's doing now.
This is true. This is true. And speaking of Mr. Filoni, this coming week, we have Bad Batch season 2, episode 12, The Outpost, and we have episode 2 of season 3 of The Mandalorian. But that's all dropping on March 8th. But before we talk about those shows, we need to talk about the episodes that have come before. So when we get back from this break, Brian's going to walk us through what was particularly interesting about the most recent Bad Batches and the debut of Season 3 of The Mandalorian. Brian, you were talking about how what's really cool about the Bad Batch is there was a phrase when we were growing up, you know, back when televisions had knobs and there were only three channels, but there was this thing called
appointment television. But even though we can watch it whenever we want to, we can watch a Bad Batch whenever we want to, there are still a lot of people, and I am one of them, who wait up. But it's better for me because I get it at 12 a.m. You get it at 3 a.m., don't you?
Which means I see it the next morning. But, you know, I mean, I am keeping abreast of the Bad Batch because, again, I've been loving how this particular season played out. And, in fact, I'm sure as we discuss these episodes, you've been watching the chess pieces into place. I mean, you know, and again, and there are lines to the effect of, you know, well, if you ever need a thief, it's like, okay, you know, yes, thank you, Chekhov's gun.
Oh, there is a lot of Chekhov's guns in this. I mean, there's a whole arsenal.
Well, there we go. Okay, so.
The first one in this, the first one we're going to talk about, and the second one is the crossing and retrieval. Now, they didn't announce it, but they are continuing episodes. So they're one, you know, it's two episodes into one. But they did a good job of separating them. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, it's, have we heard of Ipsium before?
I want to say yes.
Okay.
In fact, I want to say it came up this season.
Okay. But not before, not anywhere, not in the trilogies or anything like that. Like, and then not only that, but, you know, they get it in raw form and they have to refine it. So I don't know what the heck it really is. I mean, it looks like, you know, some kind of radioactive TNT or nitroglycerin or something. Ooh, wouldn't it be great if they did something like Wages of Fear with this stuff?
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're showing my age to this day. The trailer for that William Friedkin film, the one image of the truck on the swaying bridge in the rain. It's weird how you can boil an entire film down to one image, but I see that and it's like, I know what film that is, and holy cow.
Well, not only that is, okay, we had the two episodes, and when they get the mm-hmm. ISBIM, and then yep. Metamorphosis, it's not even mentioned. Mm-hmm. Do they still have it? Do they give it to Sid? I don't think so, because they still haven't seen Sid since they were on the mining planet. But anyways, basically mm-hmm. what it is we're introduced to Ipsium, we're introduced to mines, we're introduced to storms, and we're also introduced to a new group, basically mm-hmm. Oliver or Oliver mm-hmm. Twist. These kids are working for this creature. He's like a Fagin type of creature or guy.
An overseer of the mine right. who's clearly holding back, you know, the profits and starving the kids and really taking advantage of the situation. Though on a parallel track, you mentioned Sid.
Right.
And it seems the Sid not being a nice person arc in season two, they're hitting this one hard.
Yeah, especially since didn't she like say to them several times, it's because of you that I'm not dead? Yeah. And now she's yeah. still going after them like they're her playthings. And now mm-hmm. they're getting a little irritated by it.
They are. In fact, there was some discussion on this most recent episode about if we're going to break things off with Sid, we should probably do... In fact, you know, isn't that the whole point of the Metamorphosis episode? Let's do one more job for her. Let's, you know, do a big score, and then we'll all politely step away.
And as I was watching Metamorphosis, mm-hmm. this little mm-hmm. theme in the back mm-hmm. of my head, dun, 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 dun.
There we go.
Dun, 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 dun. They've turned into the A-Team.
But here's the thing. We saw the first episode and how Omega is really taking it hard.
Right. The Echo.
Yeah, that Echo stepped away. And that, you know, the rest of the Bad Batch, these guys are used to that. You know, they've been clones and they've lost friends. They've lost compatriots. But at the same time, at the end of Metamorphosis, the whole notion of get this info to Rex. You know, right. he needs to have this. It's kind of Animal Farm, you know, all animals are equal, but, you know, then there were some that are more equal than others, yeah.
Well, and then also about the crossing and retrieval is they get into a predicament that it mm-hmm. wouldn't have happened if Echo mm-hmm. was there, because they're not 100%. They're missing a piece, and because of it, they're not gelling. I mean, their spaceship gets... you know, kidnapped mm-hmm. because yeah. they're not a cohesive group like they used to be.
Given the way that Metamorphosis ends, you know, you had the Kamino Prime Minister show up at the facility where the creature that we discovered as part of this episode is now being stored. And one of the Kamino scientists from the clone building facility just is refusing to talk. And it's the Prime Minister that volunteers, well, if you want her to talk, you have to find this young girl clone.
Right.
That's very special to her, Omega. And it's just sort of like, oh.
It's weird. The monster, though, mm-hmm. I guess this is something that Chancellor Palpatine was putting together before he became the Emperor. And they were working on this. Is this something that they're going to use as a weapon to take over other planets?
I do not know what to tell. You know, but again, we've clearly been introduced
and
to this
how
animal.
Is it clone? How is it dealing with clones, though? Is it? Did they just form this animal? Is it a clone of something else? Does it have the brain of? I don't know. It's a good setup to where I think the last episode will probably be going.
Yeah, and we are coming up on the 12th episode of this season this coming week. And after that, we got four more. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm getting concerned about Omega, and more to the point, I'm really starting to worry about Sid, that they just keep sort of hinting at she's going to turn. She's going to turn on them. And again, I so enjoy Rhea Perlman's vocal performance.
And the character is great when she realizes that these people, she's better off with them and not mm-hmm. turning them against her.
Now, speaking of turning, we now turn to The Mandalorian Season 3, first episode,
wow.
The Apostate.
Well, first of all, I don't remember this being in Seasons 1 and 2. I have to look back, and I definitely know not Season 1. But this is basically a prologue. I mean, it is just setting us up for what's coming up. It's like Julian, you know, you have to know this before you see the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes basically place on Navarro, which looks like a very cleaned up version of Disneyland. Not Batuu, but basically Disneyland. I mean, you now got the monkey lizards in the trees and not being barbecued. Mm-hmm. You've got people happy. Everything's nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids are learning in their school. I mean, it's really kind of shocked me to see how great this set looks like now, because isn't this the first thing we saw in the very first show?
You're not wrong. Yeah. I mean, I think it was worth it alone to see Carl Weathers as the respected figure with his two droid attendants keeping his cape off the ground.
It wasn't that great? And I didn't see it, first of all. I didn't see it right away. You only just notice him when he's walking away, and you just see these things, and you're going, what the heck?
That's the thing. When you become a respected figure in society, and people expect you're a leader, you got to look like a leader. So, you know, dress the part. So,
well, okay. And that wasn't even the beginning. That was when he, Din Djarin went to Navarro. But the beginning, what did it do? First of all, we didn't hear the theme music, and all the helmets were just from The Mandalorian. Except for Darth. You always have to throw Darth in there. But everything else was just from The Mandalorian. You know, when they go through all the helmets at the beginning. And all we heard something being made. And then we saw it was a Mandalorian helmet. Now, right away, did you think this was a flashback, or did you think this was in real time?
Initially, and knowing how Mando actually became a Mandalorian, you know, and it was the whole notion of, oh, are we watching that ceremony? You know, are we watching that moment? And then the fake out.
Right.
No, you're not.
Well, but first of all, there were a lot of Death Watch there. Remember when he went with the dark saber? There were only a couple of them. And she said, our numbers have diminished. So again, that was like showing us that, okay, where are we now? But did you know the actor, the kid who was getting the helmet? Same kid who played the Tusken Raider boy.
Oh, okay.
And it's Jimmy Kimmel's nephew.
Well, okay. So
yeah,
clearly Favreau, you know.
Exactly.
The favors keep coming. That's cool. Okay.
And they talk about it in that interview, too. He goes, yeah, my nephew's in it. He goes, oh, yeah, he can't, you know, somebody needed a Tusken Raider kid, so we came up to him. But, yeah, so the beginning was the creature is technically called a dinosaur turtle. So it has no neat Star Wars name. It's called the dinosaur turtle. Now, to me, I was trying to figure out because, you know, remember the credits? They showed the illustration, and it looked like a turtle, but this thing looked like a crocodile. So what I'm thinking is it was easier to have the long snout of grabbing things and eating things in CGI than having the turtle little mouth thing.
You're probably not wrong there. I mean, again, you know, that's one of the things that's so enjoyable about these Art of the Mandalorian books, and, you know, or for that matter, I just got a copy of the Art of Avatar, the Way of Water, just two watches. They're exploring ideas and just sort of like, oh, we're in post, and that isn't going to work at all. Okay, change the design, you know. So, but what I think was more important about this opening was the notion of, I mean, here Mando comes and saves the day. And but still gets that reaction to the effect of almost no thank you. You know, no reaction.
You're not one of us, so you can't do this. There was really no thank you. I mean, you know, he went in there, he talked to her, And mm-hmm. actually, didn't she like kind of hug him when he was leaving? Or at least you got the feeling that she was grateful that he saved the day? Mm-hmm. Or that at least he was going to become a Mandalorian again if he could find the rivers?
If what you're saying is true, this 30-minute long episode is prologue. It set up the situation. It reminded you of where things left off last season.
Right.
And we'll get to the Bo-Katan section in a moment. But the whole notion of, in order for Mando to sort of reinsert himself back into the world that he knows and that he, you know, really wants to be a part of, he's going to have to go back to Mandalore. He's going to have to find the spring and bathe himself. But in much the same way as we were talking about the chess pieces used in The Bad Batch, what was kind of interesting with this particular episode of The Mandalorian, it's like, well, let me introduce you to the chess pieces. You know, it's not a question right. of they're even moving around the board. It's like, we have a pirate character that we haven't met before, who's clearly going to be somebody that Mando's going to have to deal with as he's doing these things.
Doing their best Bill Nighy, too.
Well, yeah, you're not wrong. But at the same time, the whole notion of, in order to fix IG-11, you know, we need a part. You know, right. And
so,
you know,
that's going to be a side quest. It's like you're playing a video game. You're yeah. trying to get to the big boss, and what? Mm-hmm. And now you got a side quest to find a fish.
Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating was to watch the reaction online about this show, and people grousing about the very thing you said. It's prologue.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just sort of like, well, from a story construction point of view, yeah, you do sometimes have to set up the dominoes. It can't just be dominoes falling down.
And you had two of the best action sequences that have been in this whole series. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had the fighting of the dinosaur. Mm-hmm. You had mm-hmm. the asteroid field. Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. So what are they complaining about? Because no story was finished, it was just set mm-hmm. up. I do have one question though. The armorer. In the other seasons, you saw mm-hmm. her and she mm-hmm. looked like she was wearing some kind of fur coat. Here, it actually looked like it was her hair coming out of her helmet.
You know, I didn't notice that. I guess we're going to have to go back.
Yeah, because I don't know why all of a sudden I even asked my wife. And actually, I had to wake her up to look at it. And she did not, she said, no, she's wearing a fur coat. And I'm going, I don't know, that kind of looks like they're split ends to me.
Well, remember, we've always seen her indoors.
Yeah. You know, oh, that's right.
Subterranean caverns and space outposts kind of a thing. So this is the first time we've seen her in sunlight.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe. And of course, Baby Yoda does his Baby Yoda stuff, and it mm-hmm. you know, when he and the and that, how do you say it, Zillions, the little guys,
yep, mm-hmm.
and how he just wants to hug them because they're smaller than he is.
Favreau and Filoni know what they have with that character,
right.
And the beauty of Grogu is that you can play him for comic relief, but at the same time, you can, on a dime, when that character is threatened, you can tug the audience's heartstrings.
He is the greatest character that I've ever seen, and he's still, you know, all his merchandise, it just flies off the shelves.
Speaking of which, you included as part of your research material earlier,
Mandomania.
Yeah, so a Grogu Tamagotchi? Did I get that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? I don't know whether I'm going to get one. I had a Tamagotchi at one time, and mm-hmm. Oh my God, if that thing was hungry, wherever you were, it was beeping at you. And I killed mm-hmm. a couple of them. I murdered my Tamagotchi, so I don't know if I want to murder a Baby Yoda.
I think there would be grave consequences. So we already have the word about episode 2 of season 3.
Yeah, it's going to be really good.
Really well, but good, that's and fine, a much then. Longer episode.
If they just wanted to just get wet my whistle, okay, mm-hmm. that's fine. I have no doubt that that, I mean, not only did they wet our whistle, but they did give us two really great set pieces. And they brought in the Anzalians, they brought back in Grief, they brought in, you know, people that you're going to see. Oh, and of course, the very last scene with Bo-Katan.
This is true.
Now, I'm watching this, and I'm, you know, my first view of it, I'm going, oh my God, is this going to be it? But no, I'm thinking they got to bring her back, because you can't waste, first of all, you can't waste a character, because it's one of the best from the Clone Wars series. And second of all, you have Katie Sackhoff, and and just to see her sitting in the throne with her leg up, like, you know what? I don't care anymore. You're just, you're watching, you're going, oh my God, she does care. And she wants that, she needs the Darksaber.
She does, but again, it's threading that needle, creating a logical way for her to get access to, and again, it's the own mythos of Mandalore, to the effect of it has to be taken in battle, it has to be earned, can't be handed off.
Is there any chance that things can change with the Mandalorians? Can we get the Death Watch to agree maybe taking off the helmet is not a bad thing? Can we get, you know, the do you think it's going in that direction, or do you think it's still Death Watch against everybody else?
Well, look at the title of the first episode.
Right.
The Apostate. This is a religious offense. They want nothing to do with him because he has not followed the tenets of their world. And so we are in the hands of two wonderful storytellers, John Favreau and Dave Filoni. And I trust these guys. So it's like, okay, let it unfold the way it's supposed to. And to give you some idea of, you know, the type of guys we're dealing with here, think about what just got also got handled in the process of this episode. We find out where Cara Dune is, you know, that wonderful character that had to leave the show because the actress couldn't keep her mouth shut.
Do you think maybe they're going to recast her? Because there is another character coming up that is played by another MMA female fighter. And are they going to make her Dune, or are they going to just bring in another character like her?
I don't know. I know that, you know, there were definitely plans. In fact, there was a certain frustration at Lucasfilm about how that whole situation went down, that they really wanted to work with that actress. They really had plans. On the other hand, you know, Moff Gideon, you know, the whole notion of, oh, well, you know, he's off in a war tribunal, and it's just sort of like, oh, we're seeing him again. You can't have that great an actor and that strong a character without, you know, him coming back on the canvas at some point. I just don't know if it's going to be part of the season four you discussed earlier, which, by the way, I know you mentioned that production is getting started in October of this year, but you neglected to mention that season four is written. It's done.
Right, it's done. Yeah, he's done, and he's even thinking about where am I going to go beyond this.
That's amazing.
But I don't know. I think that when we get the Mandalorian, we get when the Bad Batch is the direction it's going, it's really making things exciting again for Star Wars. And you can see it in the interviews. You can see it in the fact that they want to say this is a collaboration. I hope they show a lot of, they stream a lot of the English Star Wars celebration. That's coming up soon, right? That's coming up in, is it May?
I want to say yes. I'll have to check on the dates of that.
And I mean, because I'll be in front of my TV watching that, my 77-inch TV. But you got a big TV, too, that you can watch it on.
Yeah, if I could get Nancy to watch something other than Hallmark movies. But
well, you know what? I wouldn't mind if they charged us, too. If they want to charge us $50 to see every single panel whenever we want, fine. Do that. It could be a pay-per-view.
This has been the discussion for the better part of 10 years now when it comes to Comic-Con.
Right.
You know, the whole notion of you know, whenever it gets discussed, the studios push back to the effect of, no, we want the excitement of, you know, you could only see this in Hall H. And just what frustrates me no end is they say that, and then 30 seconds after the presentation in Hall H is over, the trailer, you know, invariably, whatever is debuted in that room is available online. That, yes, you do occasionally get to see pieces of film that don't show up for months anywhere else. I mean, if you're in Hall H, you get to see that. But yes, there's been a number of folks, especially during the pandemic, to the effect of, you want the heat, make the material available online.
Yeah. But all it takes is one person to do it, and then everybody's going to follow suit. So when they see they can make money on it, it's all about the money.
Yeah, but you got to remember that we are living in a moment where everybody did the Oklahoma land rush into streaming.
Right.
And now everybody's suddenly retrenching because it's like, you said we'd make money doing this. And it's like, well, yeah, eventually. Well, anyway, we'll just have to see how this plays out. So I guess that's going to do it for this edition of Looking at Lucasfilm. But if you enjoyed Brian's insights into all things Lucasfilm and that sort of thing, well, where can they find you social media-wise,
still, Brian? I'm trying to look at other options, but it's still going to be Twitter at Geek with Children, C-H-I-L-D-R-N. And I know it's confusing. I can't find it sometimes. But yeah, that's where I can be found. And where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Instagram at Jim Hill Media. And over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. Also have a couple other shows. If you want to check those out, we of course have Disney Dish with Len Testa. We also have Fine Tuning that I do with Drew Taylor, and hopefully Drew and I will be getting together also while I'm out in California. And by the way, Drew has a wonderful podcast, Light the Fuse, that is about the Mission Impossible movies and John Wick. In fact, we've got John Wick 4 just coming over the horizon there. We also have Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. And Aaron, by the way, has launched his own satellite podcast as well, 32nd Street, which is about the world of advertising. That's worth checking out there. I'll tell you what, folks, if you could do Brian and I a favor, if you could head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend Looking at Lucasfilm, that would be very, very helpful. That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks for listening, and we will be back soon.